Good evening, everybody. Here at the HKW on the, we call it in German, Katzentisch, the cat table. More positively, you could also call the place the Agora, blending in nicely in the social hub of the cafe space. You almost made it through the festival marathon, and we are trying to keep your attention for just another hour and hope it's going to be interesting. We might change the format when we have the feeling it's not interesting anymore. I remember that 2 years ago, we were sitting here almost in the same constellation, introducing the project Lehman, also by that almost same group of people involved. And Lehman, also like a publishing project in that sense, or a book, was constantly jamming actually the presentation and rendering the whole actually presentation useless. I'm curious what Meta is now going to challenge us with. And first of all, I wanted to introduce the people sitting here for the people who don't know them. Far out on the other side is Daniela Silvestrin. She's an independent researcher and curator in the fields of media, and for the people who are following Transmediale, she has been involved in Transmediale for many, many years, but also works on a lot of independent projects. Next to me, Mario De Vega, an artist who deals mainly with the threshold of perception and awareness. He works across different media, and mainly, namely sound, but sometimes he can also create explosions or do things which might completely disappear unnoticed. He is kind of the initiator behind this project, Meta, but the nature of that project is a collaborative approach, so more to that later. In the middle is Victor Mazon, also from Mexico. An artist who mainly deals with the invisible and inaudible spectrum of waves which surround us, which was kind of an important part of the Lehman project 2 years ago. He's heavily involved into inventing and building technologies to get things audible or visible which are there, but not actually there for most of us, and he's also responsible for big parts of the technical aspects of the Meta project. And next to Victor is Martin Müller from Dicey Studios here in Berlin, an very good graphic designer, but with a strong interest in general questions of publishing, and he's interested in like the good old-fashioned book, but also in other ways of kind of making them and also bringing them to an audience. That for the introduction. We are going to talk about bullshit in the next few minutes. And at least this is how the philosopher Harry Frankfurt calls the post-truth or post-factual politics. And in the core, this is what the texts which are in that book part of the publication we are going to talk about dealing with, and to get into like that topic, I would like to ask Daniela, for those who didn't dive into the topic so far, to briefly tell us like what post-truth or post-factual actually means.
Hello, is that on? Yeah. That's a really heavy question. I don't think I would dare to give a definite explanation of it. I think post-truth is the word that was heard here many times during the festival, and it's the word that was coined by the Oxford Dictionary end of 2016 as the word of the year, in order to somehow manifest this feeling of that a lot of the ways in which information is being communicated or treated and how knowledge is produced more and more depends on kind of an emotional approach to it rather than a factual approach to it. And you mentioned the bullshit word by Harry Frankfurt, which I think is a good tool or a good concept to approach a possible understanding of post-truth, because he already in 2005 or 2006 published the book on bullshit, and where he already talks about this feeling, I think, that in the end led to the post-truth being coined or defined by or declared as the word of the year by the Oxford Dictionary. And with bullshit, he's talking about this general feeling and observation that in the end, more and more, the way things are being communicated are not, or the importance lies not so much on what is being communicated, but what the goal is. So that people rather, try to achieve a goal with their communication and want to go into that direction, and what they say can be true but doesn't have to be true, and that the importance of truth here is not so much an issue anymore, but rather whether the communicator is able to achieve the reaction that he wants to achieve with the communication.
Yeah. In your introduction to that book, you also kind of put that into relation to fake news and misinformation and kind of facing phenomena like Trump and things like that, like things which like approach you like on your gut feelings, like your Bauchgefühl, basically. So that it's not so much about what you say, it's more the way how do you say that and how do you place your information to an audience. So that's what I found interesting aspect. And in a way, this is also the big question for the Meta project. So it's, on the one hand, you have the content or the content you want to transmit, but it's also a question how you transmit and how do you reach an audience and how do you convince an audience that what you have to say is important.
Yeah, that's definitely the core, I would say, of this project, that we, this time with this publication project, we wanted to bring together, or it's another attempt after Lehman that you already mentioned, to bring together the content and the topic that we want to talk about, which in Lehman was, we were brought together for Lehman through our common interest in electromagnetic radiation and the excess of the man-made signals that we use for wireless communication technologies. And in that first project, we wanted to talk about this phenomenon, not only by addressing it through text and through, let's say, written word, but also with the experience of with giving an experience at the same time. So there was this book that had this special cover that had integrated a circuit that was an antenna receiving a specific spectrum in the electromagnetic from electromagnetic radiation that is used for wireless telecommunication technologies, and you could. And that was translating and transducing them and turning into sound. So you could read the book while at the same time listening to this kind of atmosphere created by these waves around you. And Meta is now a project where we use, let's say, the experience and these first attempts and experiments that we did with this publication project in order to again talk about an issue that we see as a contemporary topic and important critical moment, but instead of just reflecting about it on one level, we want to bring together an experience that gives kind of an effective way of approaching it. So using different materials, using different platforms, and using the technologies as well that are at the core of this discourse.
Mayo, Meta. In the end, or in the epilogue of the book, you give a list of, together with Victor, of, I don't say, like 20 or 30 definitions what matter is for you. The first one is, matter is a display in form of a publication. Another one is, matter is a proxy of the dissemination of information. Can you briefly let us know the conceptual framework, like the whole system, what matter is? Then matter is not simply a book, it's much more. It's, as I said in our discussions we had together before, you're not only trying to make a publication, you're trying to reinvent the process of publication and of distribution and of kind of communication of a publication at the same time. Just in brief, if this is possible, what are the separate segments of the big meta cluster?
Yeah, I mean, I will say that it's, in a way, it's basically a representation of our own dependencies. So in between other, or all these possible approaches of how to define this platform, this system, this conglomeration of information, I would say it's a representation of dependency and it's a platform to disseminate information. But at the same time, it's, in my understanding, it's a sculpture. So it's, let's say, in a way, once you own the object, so to say, so you become a node. A node that, together with other node and other node, create a structure, so an invisible structure. And in my understanding, so I will call this a sculpture. But between other things, it's also an organism. So an organism that erupts, that roars, that vomits human decay. But also, this roaring or blurping, it's a matter of hope. Of hope that dissemination of information and the creation of platforms for education in a way. So that is not just the fact of printing matter, so and let's say putting content over paper that spreads in different mediums or in different channels. It's a platform that through a long discussion with Daniela, Victor, and with Martin, so we realized that the need really is to create a platform for exchange. So, and in a way, it's almost a contradiction too, so which fascinates me. So I think is one of these possible ways to show human decay. So how we can contradict each other. So how can we display also the value of failure, so what to fail means. So it's, as we briefly talked before, it's based on the principle of human communication, so emission, reception, and message in between. And there are many factors that obstruct or interfere the message.
But one step backwards, it sounds to all of you probably very, very abstract and blurry. One step backwards, it's a very complex system. Please explain how the system is constituted and works. Otherwise, it's probably difficult to follow your line of thinking here.
Yeah, as I said.
Just in brief.
Yeah, as I said, so it's one-to-one representation of dependencies. So let's say if you own the printed part of the project, you will get just some blank pages. So you basically cannot access the content of the printed object, and you depend on an interface. It's an electronic interface that reveals the content with a special light and a special algorithm that is script in the core of the interface that probably Victor will explain more in detail. So the dependency is one-to-one. So without one, you cannot access the other. And without the electronic interface, this is basically useless. So the principle, or what we are trying to do, is once you own the publication and you provide voltage to the electronic interface, you disseminate information. So the content that is printed in the object will disseminate digitally through a Wi-Fi spot. So you turn on this thing, you can read the content of the book, let's say the printed book, and people around you can access this content digitally. And that's what I mean with dependency. So you create this back and forth of how in somehow we deal with each other. So I can speak in front of the wall, explaining all this, what I try to clarify in my thoughts, but without you in front of me, these words will be useless, they will be meaningless. So in a way, it's a representation of this factor. And the other thing is that this, it's a portable server, it's also a microcontroller. So it means you can use this as a platform for education. So you can teach students how to approach physical computing. So how you can use also the internet as a bridge. So I mean, how could you build up communities to exchange information? Because the next part is that it's also a digital platform on the internet. So let's say it's a database that hopefully will grow with contributions of different people. So we have 8 contributions here, and we have the possibility to produce one part of this project in China, in Shenzhen. And there was another contribution coming from Chris Villafuerte that basically just joined the project. So he flew from New York to Shenzhen in China to document the process of production, which in a way, I would say for Victor and me, without knowing this person, let's say physically, we realized that this need to create networks or communities, it's possible, and it's fundamental here.
As you said, there are already 8 contributors in that project, not counting you. So for me, it's not just an object you put out into the world as a normal book where the text in the end count. Like the process, as you all said in our discussions before, started like long time ago already with the Lehman Project when you were starting the discourse. What like we had that idea to put out that content, but negotiate kind of the way it had to be. So and the final format, like with all these kind of meta structures to it, developed out of that project. So there's one nice text in that book which deals with all these questions we have towards publication, especially like also in the academic content world, where the content is produced and kind of sealed in most of the cases behind paywalls, and is not accessible for an audience out in the public anymore. But this text is really questioning these ideas of publication. So and what it means to publish. So and that publishing is not just releasing a text out into the world. It's also like creating an audience, actually. So or provoking in context in which something is then distributed and received. And that I found really interesting, that with the form and the format you choose for your publication, you're also responsible for the way how it was received. So you're not just kind of connecting it to the normal chain of distribution on the book market. You think it from the beginning much more large in a different scale. So in that book here, in the physical printed object, are 8 texts. Substantial text to topics which were floating around probably in the last days here in the building anyway, like just mentioning blockchain and Bitcoin as one starting point, but it goes really deep into philosophical questions of distribution of information as well, and linguistic concepts of what it means to speak out things. But in this book are 4 texts in English and 4 texts in Spanish. As you said, like if you activate the book, in the moment you start to read it, you activate opening up the platform as well. There are the reversed language contents, so doubled up and accessible, like on the platform. But the platform is much more, and I would like to ask Viktor a bit more in detail about the web interface, the platform, also like the technical aspects of you, how kind of almost brutally interfere in our communication spectrum we are using to kind of check our Twitter and what Facebook, what you're probably all doing right now. Please, Viktor, tell us a bit more. Maybe we can show the platform side aspect of that as well. There's also an aspect you can see on your mobile phone, probably in a second when Viktor explains you.
Yeah, one important part, like besides the technology itself, was the discussions to reach to these ideas. So basically, we were thinking how we can question this idea of publishing or editing, and how can we activate the user, the final user, to contribute also to the project. So after these discussions, we thought, as we are using this security ink, and we need to use this special light to light up, to enlight all this text, this printed matter, we were thinking on how to present this on a, not just in the website, that will be like also, there is like a website where you can access, you can see the information, you will see like an archive related, but also how we can use this microcontroller to use the internal memory from it to have all the text and to then create a local network, like an access point. So basically the idea is you have the book, that this book normally is like a one person reading it, but when you start the system, it creates a hotspot, let's say an access point, like when you go to an airport or where you are in a public transport, and then you access to the whole content, and then you liberate this content from the people surrounding you. And this offers like also this idea of sharing or an open knowledge, and this through this platform. That when we went to Shenzhen, we went to the headquarters where the people that they designed this ESP, and using this ESP we can distribute information, but at the same time we can disturb the information surrounding us. So we try to address these topics of bullshit, these topics of post-truth, to create information and to disrupt the information surrounding us.
Thank you. Yeah, you see here on the screen what you probably could all see on your mobile phones right now. The device is not only opening a lot of hotspots or multiplying the hotspots you're connected to. You're actually able to place the content of the book, if I'm right, in that list of Wi-Fi spots, or at least that was the idea to implement in the project.
Yeah. So basically, like as you was presenting before, we have all the text that we have select these 8 authors, and then they are in the book, 4 in Spanish, 4 in English, in the server, because at the end it's like a portable server. You can find the in other languages. And then the idea is that the end user will also contribute. So he can upload a relevant text that will come to the server, to the main server, and from this main server will be distributed to the rest of the users. So let's say we have 550 books like this, or this edition, this project, then every user is potentially being a publisher also. So he could send a book, send a text, or like an image, or like a video, some relevant information that will be talked to the rest of the nodes. So then you can start to create this parallel network of information.
Yeah, but I would like to add something there. So when Viktor mentioned, let's say, going into the infra world of mass production of microelectronics like Shenzhen in China, and being able to dig really there and, let's say, contact the people who produce the IC and involve them in a project, let's say, trying to not just use them as a provider, so let's say not just coming and say, I want to buy a certain amount of units from you, so it's more, let's say, to involve them, to explain them the intention behind this, and in a way, bring them as part of a community too. So let's say to show them that they also can add something for this project. And that was, in my understanding, a really big motivation too. So in a way also this is connected to the fact that we were in Shenzhen, because we are trying to build up a platform, so in which it's a master program where students are not taking lessons in an indoor environment. So they are not going to academia to get a better expertise of their interests. So it's more going to certain contexts of conflict, I would say. Shenzhen one was one of them. And we were there with them, showing them, for example, how you replace a motherboard of a mobile phone that, in this case, the brother of Victor found in Italy that was blocked. And we went there, so we just show them so that you can replace directly the motherboard there, or you can go and clone a PCB. So you can, let's say, dig really close to how you can use, let's say, those abilities, those infrastructures, I would say.
Now that was for me very important to see how you were working or approaching that project, that you were not just kind of thinking about some gimmicky kind of book packaging for the next fancy like fetish device. So we were discussing that a lot. So how much that differs from other kind of techno fetish objects, so that you really kind of, in order to do that thing, trying to understand how the chain of production is working, and what it means when you order from certain networks a certain microcontroller, where that thing is actually coming from. So like not just ordering it, just going down there, and understanding like these chains of production. So that was an interesting aspect for me. Before we maybe going to show you actually the content or the object itself, I wanted to go one step further into and questioning the process again, because as you can imagine that, like, if you're not just printing a book and you have to imagine the book will come later on in a case, in an aluminium case, where the server is going to be integrated. So it's an object, of course. So already, like, the design and production aspects of that, the technology not mentioning, is quite complex. But imagine also, like, if you think like publication not just as a container and as a process, that this process is also like really full of failures and misleads and bumps on the way. So like, I don't know how long, like 2 years you were working on that project now. And you're all kind of from similar fields. You know what it means to put out a publication, with the editorial process and the design and the printing and so on, and how many failures can happen already on that way. But this, in this terms, it's multiplied. And maybe we show the book quickly to give you an idea. You see, like, this is the controller which comes with the book in the end, and here on the table is the book. In the camera, so you only see the content when you shine the light. On the content, otherwise it's not, it's an empty book. So you can't see it. It's printed with a special ink, used mainly like to print banknotes and documents for security measures. Yeah, you all know that. Like printing a book with an ink like that means that the whole printing process is kind of an adventure as well. And maybe the cutting process or the book binding process is an adventure of that. And I would like to give the microphone to Martin from Dicey to tell a bit about that special experience to work with a printer who is used to print in black and white or in colors on nice paper, approaching them and making them kind of part of the project in a way as well, or complices as well.
Yeah, they were super excited, the printers, to do this project, because they never done anything like it. And it was nice to be there at the printing process, and the guy standing in the machine itself was very excited to work on this, because he had to change his whole process that he usually has. And they put a lot of effort in making everything right for the bookbinder and to give the, like, they went to the bookbinder and explained everything to them and showed them everything. And they didn't deliver empty pages, but they printed a second color so that the bookbinder would know where to cut and everything. But for some reason, the bookbinder managed to fuck everything up totally. And so we were supposed to have a book right today, but we don't have any books now except for this one copy now, because they have to actually reprint it and recut it and rebind it. And until now, it's a total mystery how they managed to do what they did. I have no idea until now, but I hope we will know next week and know how to prevent these errors in the next printing process and binding process, more to be more precisely.
We talked about that, and if we are supposed to tell you like these failures of the project as well, or to talk about that at all, but for me it's kind of crucial and also like really important to know in process like that, and for me it relates also to the whole idea of that project. And one explanation for me would be simply the printer who printed that book. He was working under ideal conditions, so he was kind of having a blacklight system installed on the table where the printer is kind of proving the big sheets coming out of the printing machine. So he had that fascination to print something invisible, but he could see it immediately and correct and do things. And in the next chain of production, when that whole paper, the printed paper, was going to the bookbinder, it's a completely different company. Of course, they had the technical marks, like
they
printed in black.
Blacklight.
So even they also had black light.
Yeah.
They had black light also when they were cutting it or not?
I wasn't there at that moment, but they had a black light to see everything and understand how what it is all about, and somehow they still managed to.
But I can well imagine that the guy, the poor guy on the cutting machine, simply had the cutting marks in black and the page numbers.
Yes.
But otherwise, he was cutting empty pages to him. So he was basically sensible, like disconnected from the content. So this is something which kind of goes back to the core of also like the texts and the content of the book. So what does it mean when you are disconnected physically, if you're just operating by technical means, just by cutting marks and numbers? And of course, he said, like, well, it's an empty book, and it doesn't matter if it's kind of 2 millimeters more in that way and 2 millimeters more in that way. It's totally understandable. But it's actually it's a good illustration for that whole idea of what like the post-factual or the post-truths, like the gut feeling, if you want to say so, like it's adding to something. So it's not like saying like it's right or wrong. So to just operate in one or the other direction. And we had that in one of the texts dealing with blockchain and Bitcoin, which is kind of proposing a completely computerized like model of democracy, or questioning that. So when everything is kind of put in charge of the computers and systems which are not betrayable anymore, so, and they are just functioning. So for me, it's always the question, so what is the role of the artist or the human being in that chain, bringing in failure, bringing in kind of human measure, which is not always kind of calculatable and so kind of computable, so in a sense.
I think you're painting the bigger picture here, but like the smaller picture is related to the term that was very dominant in the beginning when we were talking about the book, and that was ignorance. And like this was also one of the ideas behind the design of the book, to like if you make a book and you want to provide people with knowledge and how this works today, and like with Frankfurter, a big term is also ignorance. You're ignorant even about you're like, it's a paradox to deliver a book and it is empty. You want to learn something with it, but you have to be ignorant. The information is there, but you can't access it until you have the means to do so. So until you have the means to do so, you are ignorant. And I think the poor guy at the machine was very ignorant of what was going on, and so he was briefed badly. And so it was actually the fault of the guys who briefed him or her. But still, it's very disappointing to see that something like that can happen.
But it's just a scaled down model of how things are out in the world anyway. So
yeah,
it's about kind of ignorance and how you brief people and what you want to know, let people know.
Yes.
When we were discussing this here, we said like, well, we are trying to introduce a project which is a meta idea of publishing and trying totally different models of publishing, distributing, and exchange, basically, of knowledge, not only knowledge production, but also knowledge exchange. And we do it in a very stupid classical format here. We're sitting here in front of you on that panel. We have the power of the microphone and we talk to you and you fall to sleep in the darkness over there. There is one microphone to ask questions and we encourage you to ask questions. But we thought maybe we do the same thing the book is actually proposing as a platform of distribution. We just come down to you with that book object and with the device, with the microcontroller, and kind of sit like we are five people. We can all tell about different aspects of the book. If you're interested, just come close to us and have a look and ask questions about that thing directly in a one-to-one exchange. Then this is what Meta is about. It should trigger another way of interaction and not reproducing kind of this waddle of one too many out there.
Yeah, I would say that's a crucial point here, so that in a way also the format of, for say, forcing you to stand, go to the microphone, so probably it's quite problematic because, yeah, it's not, let's say, a friendly way to give you the voice. But I think as Karsten said, so I mean, for us, I mean, also I would say, speaking, let's say, for the voice of the other, so speaking in first person is easier, so but I have to say for us, because it's a group of people involved here, so not just the people who are sitting here, so but also the people who contribute with their thoughts in the publication, so it's a matter of also knowing from the audience, so it's a matter of also seeing how clear this message gets in that case to you, so and through this also seeing this as a platform that is just an ongoing process, right? Let's say yes, there are all these difficulties of how you approach, how you materialize thoughts, I mean how you finally have a finished object or a finished system to disseminate, but there's a way beyond this, so there are many other aspects behind all this, let's say, starting and ending something.
Yeah, like I think it's, for me, the thing is not so much about the final object. And even if it's once on the table, fully functioning, it's not so much about the object. It's about the process and what that process might trigger later on. So yeah. Maybe it's only just the next project. But one of the texts said something like, when it was about publication, and I found that really interesting. So if you work in a group on a publication like that, and you manage in the end to just get one person who's actually reading that or joining in that discourse, then that publication is successful. And this is something like I had to think about quite a lot, and we just, with my girlfriend, we had a discussion today. To give you another example, in the theater world, a text which is written for theater is counted only published in the moment when it was played and staged. With the whole process putting it on stage involved in that. But before a theater text is not put on stage, it's not counted as published. And for me, like this kind of what the project, like the way a project makes and the whole process of discourse and failure and reattempts and whatever, it's just kind of leading to something else which might happen afterwards. It's not in control of you as a publisher anymore, but the way you approach that that thing. So if it's just an object to put on a table or in the bookshop, or if you offer already that process as a discursive format, that's really, really important, I think.
Yeah, I would say that, let's say, you, Karsten, me, so let's say working together, not just in this project, but in some others that are happening now, we often have this conversation of, this need to create situations. So let's say when you simply involve a process like this, you create a situation to the printer. So let's say that they have to find a method to approach the production process of something like this, but you create a situation with the user. So because at the beginning you will say this is a joke, I mean there is nothing printed here, and then you reveal the part and say, okay, then there's something you can grasp, so you can access. But in between this is this need to really come back to this situational aesthetic. So this is this idea of invisible theater. So there are actions one to one. So let's say if you can communicate with one person, probably it's more than enough. And I think that, in my understanding, is the real value of this. So that's what I mean with dependencies, but at the same time is this value of creating this situation so that you basically can communicate straight to the other.
Are there any questions you think you have to address to all of us or to the audience, then please use the microphone. Otherwise, I would really propose we come down to you and show you the device and the object, and you can ask.
Hello. Oh, right. So I did miss the very start, so maybe you addressed this already, but it seems like this really beautiful book object that you've made and the website, part of like the ecology of making that would be, like, how is it paid for, and like how have you afforded to make such a beautiful object, and how is that sort of the costing of something printing in that printing in that kind of ink, like, and how does that sort of determine the kind of relationship you have with an audience, and how much the book costs, for example, and like how's that handled?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a very practical question. So yes, let's say, well, I was born in Mexico, so I moved to Germany 10 years ago. Carsten said that this other creature is Mexican, but look at him, he's not. So so Victor is from Spain, Daniel is from Germany, Martin is also from Germany. So, but let's say one part of this money come from Mexico, strangely. It should come from Germany. You have more money than us, but anyway, so it comes from Mexico, and then with all this, I'm not sure if you were here, but we tried to explain that we went to China to produce part of this thing, so we went with some students working with a university in the Netherlands, and in 2015, I got a commission from a festival in Amsterdam called Sonic Acts, and they invite Victor and me now to go to Shenzhen. Then this February, well, now February, let's say late February, we go back to Amsterdam to give a seminar about this kind of thing. So they are also putting part of the production cost that is part of a program from the European Union. So basically, it's money coming from Mexico and from the Netherlands. And that's why also the book is bilingual, so that's why it's in Spanish and English. And production-wise, of course, it's not cheap. No, I mean, it's, but also what is quite interesting for me is that's what I mentioned, this thing of digging really in the infra world of batch production in China. Because if you think, let's say, in terms of an aluminum case, and if you think in terms of producing a custom circuit and a PCB and so on, of course, if you want to pay this in Europe, it would be just probably impossible. So, I mean, if you think this is an artistic project. But in China, it's possible. So it's possible now to say you don't need to produce 5,000 copies or 5,000 units of one item, but you can say I need 500, you can also say I need 10. And so we went there, so we contact the companies, so we explained the project, and now we are in the process of making this possible. But to talk about numbers, so let's say something like this, I would say all together, let's say involving translations, commissions of text, proofreading, printing, custom design, all together, I would say we are over 15,000 euros, so easily. The problem comes now is, let's say it's an object that has certain aspects formally, and we had this discussion of, okay, how much it will cost. So because then you open a very complex question, so to who you are addressing this? who is able to pay 50 euros for a book, which I think is not that pricey. So you can easily pay 50 euros for a catalog of an exhibition that is produced massively. So I mean, say if you have a catalog, you can easily have a run of 5,000 copies. So we are running in 550 copies. But this, what you ask for me, is crucial, because then it's really this behind all this process. So if a project like this costs this, so then the question is how much it costs to the public and who will buy this. So each item will cost around 25 euros just to produce it, thinking that you are producing in China, thinking that you go to Shenzhen, you make the contacts, all this. But if you want to publish something like this in Europe, each item will cost easily 50 or maybe more. So the contradiction comes that it's a privilege. It is. So it has this part of just, let's say, a certain, discrimination also, which is problematic for me. So that's why we decide, okay, in the moment you turn on this thing, you disseminate the content. So the content is an important aspect here too. So, but the object itself, it's so present that probably the content is, let's say, secondary for the eye. So, but in a way, so the moment you simply spread it digitally, I think we solve this part of the problem. So because probably for some people, the important part is the content and not the object itself. And it's something that Victor and me, we have tried since we started working together 10 years ago. Say every single thing we produce, it's open hardware. So I mean, we just publish the schematics, and it's just whoever wants to use this can use it. And here it's a good example, because now, let's say one part is, let's say, the physical aspect of the book or the publication together with the interface, but the other is that there is a platform that people can contribute with code. So you can use this as a tool also to jam networks, what we are trying to do now. So let's say you can block Wi-Fi spots, you can clone them, so you can create fake networks and so on. And this is what we are trying now to open. So I mean, who wants to contribute here? Who wants to use this as a tool for also disturbance in a way?
Also, like one important part is like all the project is also on GitHub. So if someone will like or will find the idea interesting, also they can reappropriate all this information. They can reuse it as they want. And also the hardware, as Mario said, is like easy to address. So you won't have, let's say, the same object itself, but you can replicate and create other new projects, other objects with all this information.
So you could call the whole project also a Trojan horse to place ideas in different contexts. In that case here, it's the art or media art context, and it's money coming from the cultural field, so it's funding money, but it's actually not used to produce something which makes it into the next exhibition and is good for the artists. It's something you give back. Of course, it's something for your portfolio in the end, huh? To be honest. So, but also it's something you give to an audience and you give away, and you can use it to open other doors and to kind of to I don't know, as you said, use that thing, for instance, to do workshops, but also the platform is inviting people to contribute or use that system to enrich the content which is already there. So these are aspects relevant to discuss when it comes to money, so and funding money. So but we have the same discussion, about academic way of knowledge production and publication. In detail. So when projects are heavily funded, and in the end, like as an author, sometimes you have to pay the distribution networks or the big gatekeepers, and the people who are supposed to read that and get access to the knowledge have to pay as well if they are not connected to the nice library systems of the academia. So this is kind of public money goes into some projects, and then it's kind of. It's closed. The door is closed. So, and I like the aspect of projects like that that you of course you produce on a very luxury scale in a way, but you're trying to give back and you try to multiply what you get and put it out again. So, like this kind of responsibility is it's extremely important for projects like that.
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to add something. So, for example, when Carsten mentioned that is, of course, it's something for your portfolio, I would say not at all. So, because in certain point of the process, I realize that we are crossing a moment in history that probably the intention is not to have recognition or fame as an individual, let's say, in the art world. For me, it's more interesting, or it has a bigger motivation to think in communities, because when you have a community, you can exchange thoughts, you can exchange knowledge, and it becomes a way more powerful. Of course, you speak in first person, so let's say there's somebody who will say, okay, I did that, but it's not just you did it, so who did it with you, or with who you did this? So, and one example is, let's say, this thing I have done with Victor over the last 10 years, that I would say this thing also celebrate that. So, I mean, without really being clear about this, after doing it, so we realized, wow, this is basically the result of 10 years of work. And then on one part of the process, Daniela joined. And then in the last publication with Lehman, we asked Martin to, let's say, solve certain parts of the design. And with the moment when we start to see design as process, that probably, I will openly say it, I could imagine that a German designer working with a Mexican is just getting absolutely crazy, because of course I'm kind of contaminate this other creature too, so it's a way more chaotic. So it's just close to improvisation. So it's you just do the things, and it's not really planning something. But I would say I also have learned a lot from Martin in this case, to say, fucking shit, you cannot be just so wild. I mean, you need some structure in your head. I mean, which I hope I will get once. Maybe now it's too late. I mean, maybe if I would realize this 20 years ago, I could say this to you differently, but I still have some optimism that probably this can change. I promise you, Martin, really.
If there are no further questions, we reached the end of our time
here.
Come
on, ask something, please.
Or come just up here and have a closer look on the device. Thank you, everybody here, and thank you for not falling to sleep. Yeah, use the microphone.
Wait, he wants to ask.
Hi there. It's an amazing project. I think comprises a lot of disciplines and doctrines that we see nowadays, from technology to even printmaking. So my question basically addresses the dissemination part. You said that the moment you start using it, it goes, you can basically share it. From what I've seen, it's basically what blocks the access to it, to the object and to the knowledge, is the visible spectrum, right? So UV light is allowing you to go into it. Once you have access to UV light, you're able to read. My question is, have you thought about the process of dissemination also exploring other fields of human senses, such as maybe sound? So disseminating it also with sound, or maybe braille, for people that cannot see. That's it. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for the question. So also what we were finding interesting in the process is that when we use such a strong microcontroller, so through algorithm control the light, we were also planning also to create the light that also can transmit, or also can offer you some visual references. That is at the same time what you were saying, is like between this one-to-one connection to the book to when you open it and you create the structure. And all of the facts is that when we have this book connected, the previous book that was Lehman, this Ecologies of Transmission, has that antenna that was also receiving all this spectrum. So also it's like a dialogue between these two books that has also like a kind of ongoing connection to other previous works.
Hi, thank you for the presentation. I have a question for Martin, because I know, and we've been hearing that the process of designing was hard, but I wonder, as a designer, what do you think, when you have to design something invisible, basically. Because how do you design for something that just becomes visible later? Do you make this concept part of the design? Or do you just design how you normally design a book?
No. We went through the process of making test prints to determine like how everything has to look. And because we, like, nobody of us ever made something like that. And so I tried a lot of different styles and ways to set the text and everything. But as soon as that was done, it was pretty easy, actually. And I could go on, like, more or less as with every other book, except for thinking about some details, like, depending on how you hold the light source, the impression that you will get will change. The text will be more or less easy to read, and details and the characters will change a little bit. And so I had to find a font that caters to that problem. And actually, I had to think back to letterpress printing, where you had a similar problem that you could never really determine how much ink will go on the letter in the printing process, so it might seem bolder or thinner after printing, and you will have the same effect with the light. So I actually had to go back in time, quite some time, to letterpress printing to think about how I should design that. So this was very different from the usual process, of course.
And I don't know how we're in time, but I have actually one more question that I think is really important to go a little bit more into the content. So Daniela, do you have time to talk about this? Because we've heard there's eight chapters, but I have no idea what's actually in there. Sorry.
It's a very good question and relevant, of course. I'm not sure how deep we can go into that now, but I mean, in the end, the whole project, as we were mentioning earlier, came out of this process of first doing one book that brought all of us into this topic of ignorance and non-knowledge and thinking about knowledge production, dissemination, the control and the authority of who's telling what and why and to whom. And so in the end, we realized, or in this whole time in between, we discussed many different aspects of it. And it is the project is called Meta because we were interested in not following one specific narrative that is connected to this topic, but actually zoom out a little bit and look at how many different fields and questions and issues are related to it, from how many different perspectives you can actually look at this, what you could call a wicked problem, that of what is fake news in an era of post-truths. And so the selection or the invitations that we made to the authors are a huge variety of different fields. It's ranging from discourse linguistics to economics to philosophy to publishing, what you mentioned earlier, but also it's going into, so there are some texts that have a bit of a broader approach and explain things such as also the subtitle that is where we say tracing unknown knowns, which is an element or is something coming from discourse linguistics, where they have divided different forms of non-knowledge into different categories, into different stages and levels of ignorance and non-knowledge, and how you can understand them better. And so from explaining a little bit this kind of background up to very specific, you could call it case studies or examples, such as the text that you see here, the third one, Disassembling the Truth Machine, which is about Bitcoin and kind of more specific economic questions related to it, questioning the whole machine behind it and thinking and understanding of it. up to, let's give another example. Here, Nicolas Bulot, for example, he's a philosopher and is going into... So what we also wanted to do is not just have different texts that talk about it from different perspectives, but also relate more or less directly and question what we are doing, up from what does it mean to think about a publishing project, what does it mean if we want to publish, so in what kind of context do we position ourselves, what does it mean in an artistic context to work with these technologies, where Selena Savage wrote a really beautiful text on architectures of or architecturality of wireless signals, which so it's difficult to give a very short overview, but I think there's really a broad range of fields and disciplines behind it that still always come back to certain questions and reflections about what it means today to really discuss about truth, about facts, about knowledge, how it is produced and disseminated, and how certain paradigms in our approach to it and how these changes affect us, how they are changing or how we perceive these shifts. And all this, let's say content-wise, we wanted to address through the way you access it, or the kind of difficulties you have by accessing them in an invisible book. So maybe we can actually, because I had it already in mind before we come to an end, we haven't mentioned that, so the book is not completely finished yet. So in order to stay tuned, let's say, and also follow and still go through this process of difficulty of accessing this information, we have a website where you can follow what we're doing. It's meta-id.info. And there you will be able to see when the whole process is done and when, where, and how you could get one of the books and how you can access the other information on the online platform, how you can contribute to the archive that we set up there. And just follow the next complicated step of this multi-layered experience.
Thank you.